The next case is 0469 Cincinnati Bar Association versus Jeffrey Witt. Mr. Napier.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the panel, good morning. My name is Clayton Napier. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Jeffrey Witt in this matter. I would ask that I be permitted to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
What I would like to begin with is this, Your Honors. This is a fairly straightforward matter, and I know the panel has read this case and these opinions that have been cited by both of us. We're lawyers, and a lawyer's duty is to cooperate with disciplinary counsel when he's called upon to do so. We're required to make stipulations of fact, to truthfully respond to inquiries that are made of us about representation as to particular clients. And we have an honor to do that in an expeditious manner and to provide as much assistance to the disciplinary process as we can when we're approached. That's what we did in this case. Jeffrey Witt cooperated fully with what he was asked to do by the relator. He provided full access to his records. He provided a deposition. He provided information. When we were asked by the panel, or rather by the panel chair, to make agreed upon stipulations of fact to expedite the process, we agreed to do that, and we in fact did that. The thing I want to point out to the court is this, and this was contained in our fourth stipulation, and it's in our brief, and I'm going to read it to the court. The respondent and relator note that there are no aggravating circumstances that set forth in BCGD Reg 10 and that in mitigation, respondent does not have a prior disciplinary record. He has cooperated fully and freely with the investigation hereto and with the board. That was a stipulated fact that was agreed to between the relator and the respondent. Thereafter, when the final board finding came out, the final board finding incorporated a 6 month actual suspension as opposed to the 3 month state suspension that was recommended by the panel and made a separate finding that we can't understand and it is not supported in the record. Essentially, that panel found that while the client was elderly, disabled, and particularly vulnerable, there was inadequate proof that she sustained any harm as a result of respondent's actions. That's what the panel who heard the case said. Then the Board of Commissioners said on the very next page, which is in page 7 as opposed to page 6 of the final opinion, the board recommends a heightened 6 month suspension based on the aggravating factor of respondents having taken advantage of Karen and Barbara Sykes. We don't understand how that happened. There is no evidence to support that.
Counselor, who paid the $10,000?
Barbara Sykes.
And she was an elderly individual, disabled, and in confined to a nursing home setting, correct?
Essentially what the circumstance was, Your Honor, was this. Barbara Sykes was an elderly lady. She was living in Maple Knoll's nursing home, but she was quite capable. She was quite alert. She was bright. She was oriented. She knew what she wanted. She was able to communicate with counsel. The question really becomes, I think, this. She had a daughter who was having.
I understand. I read the file. Let me finish with my line of questioning here. Was she independently wealthy, unlimited resources?
I can't speak to that, Your Honor. I believe she had a significant amount of money.
Okay, so is, I question the finding here. There was inadequate proof that she sustained any harm. So I'm thinking to myself, this must have been an extremely wealthy woman, not to be prejudiced in any way by paying an attorney $10,000 at this stage in her life, and given the fact that she was confined to a nursing home facility. So, you don't have any information on that. Is that what you're telling me?
What I'm telling the panel is this. I can't speak to that. Perhaps the relator can speak to that. My understanding is that she had sufficient funds that she was able to pay the fee, and I believe her daughter was in charge of managing that, and that's what happened. But, you know, as far as I can tell, getting back to my other position in this, Your Honors, you know, when you go into a litigating process, you look at a case and you say, I can prove this. This is what the evidence will be. I can bring witnesses forward to contest these kinds of things. In the criminal law, if you sign a plea agreement and it's a knowing and voluntary agreement, then you're bound by it. If you enter into a civil contract and one of the parties goes to court to enforce the contract, you're bound by it. If you enter into a settlement in a civil case and you go to a court and an agreement is made, you're bound by it. We're prejudiced in the sense that we can't respond to this allegation other than in the air, because we forsook our right to call witnesses to contest these issues about Ms. Sykes being impaired, rather being taken advantage of, because we had made an agreement with the relator that we relied on.
Well, isn't the problem that the board found and the panel found that the respondent didn't follow the rules with respect to his IOLTA account, and that he took the fee, $10,000 fee, and said it was non-refundable before he earned the panel. I think the panel concluded that, despite his testimony, that he hadn't earned the entire fee, and by saying it's non-refundable, he's keeping money to which he's not entitled.
I think there are several things that got confused along the way in this case, and I think I addressed that particular issue in my brief. First of all, the question of flat fees came up in the discussion before the panel, and we were asked to brief that issue to the panel, and we did so. But this was not a flat fee case. This was quoted, the issue of the $10,000 was, that $10,000 fee was paid in three separate installments. The first one was a $2,000 retainer, which was deposited in the IOLTA account. Some weeks later, there was a second installment, and then there was a third installment, and that's how the $10,000 was arrived at. Initially, and the understanding of the parties, what this was to be billed against at $250 per hour. This was not a flat fee case.
Your contention is that there was no agreement at the outset for a $10,000 fee, and that it was paid in increments. Your contention is that it was paid in increments because that's how it was earned.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. It wasn't a flat fee case. Simply wasn't a flat fee case. The issue came up because Mr. Wood is primarily a criminal defense lawyer, and we were talking to the panel about how do you respond in a situation where there's a fee dispute and somebody asks for an accounting and you respond. Mr. Witt responded that he has a fee contract, which basically says in flat fee situations that these fees are earned upon receipt. He went on to explain that that's not how he treats these fees, that given the circumstances, he would refund on a quantum merit basis, depending on the amount of work and effort put into the case.
Don't we avoid these problems with a written fee agreement?
I think we do, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, what does it take?
I think you're right. I won't question that. But what I will say is, I can't find in the disciplinary rules where we're required to do that. I think what happened was, I don't think there was any dispute about the agreement that they had, that Mr. Witt had with the Sykes about the hourly rate. What happened essentially was she asked for an accounting, but it was 6 months after the representation was finished, and after he'd already been involved in some other matters with her. And Then she came into his office and took the file and left with it, and he wasn't really able to render an accounting. That had a lot to do with what happened here. Now, the violations that were cognizable in this case are basically accounting violations we submit to the panel. If you want to look at the two allegations that ultimately were sustained, all funds of clients and paid to a law, these are DR-9-102A, requiring us to deposit funds of clients into a separate identifiable account, and 9-102B-3, requiring a lawyer to maintain complete records of funds and securities and other properties of a client. Now, there was an allegation of a violation of 9-102B-4 that said a lawyer shall promptly pay or deliver to the client as requested client's funds, but that count was dismissed because she had taken the file.
The two accounts or the two charges that were found to have violated didn't have anything to do with his treatment of the client or taking advantage of or anything like that, did they? They were strictly, as I read it, accounting issues.
That was our understanding of the matter, Your Honor. And the panel's initial opinion had been that it should have been forwarded to the fee dispute resolution of the Cincinnati Bar Association for some review at that point. But the violations that they had found strictly related to management of his accounts. Now, I do want the panel to understand that Mr. Witt was not simply throwing money into accounts without being able to account. I tried to explain that. He didn't have account ledgers. His accounting wasn't good enough. We're not going to stand here and say that it was. He should have had a better way of managing his money, but the truth was he had records on his files that explained where these monies came from and whose they were, and he could reconstruct. And he did know whose money was in his account and how much. Now, there was very little money. We're talking about very minimal amounts of money that would have been in his file in any event, or rather in his IOLTA account in any event, because primarily a criminal defense lawyer. And criminal defense lawyers primarily charge flat fees, and that's essentially what you're dealing with in situations like this. So there were even some circumstances, I think, where there were a couple of overdraft charges on the accounts. In the criminal defense business, that is one of the problems that you have, is people bouncing checks. One of the other problems that you have in these kinds of situations is that what do you do when you have a dispute if you're charging flat fees? How do you go about deciding when, where, how to divide what you owe the client and what you're permitted to retain? There are people in this business, and I'm one of them, quite frankly, who would just give it all back, because it's not worth the trouble. There are other people who will take a look at the money and say, I'm going to look at the hours and the time that I've got in, and we think ultimately that we have to be able to account for the time that we spent on files.
Counselor, is your client still engaged with a CPA to help him in the office accounting process and the management of his funds and his various accounts?
He is, Your Honor. I can assure the court that that's the case. We've spent a considerable amount of time looking at this. Jeffrey Witt wants to do it right. He's a guy that really tried to seek out people to get advice as to how to approach this thing. And when we started looking at it, we started figuring out what he needed to do to straighten it out. And those things have long since been done. This case is over 3 years old. His accounting practices are radically different than they were now. I'd like to point out to the panel that when this thing was opened up to look into his accounting practices to see what he was doing with other people's accounting, nobody had a claim against Jeff saying that he hadn't. That he'd taken their money under, that he had done anything wrong with respect to any client. Our position here is that nobody's ever been hurt. The truth is about this case with Ms. Sykes that nobody really, I think, seriously questions that he spent all the time he said he spent on this case. This woman was literally hauled away from, this woman's daughter was literally hauled away from the Maple Knoll nursing facility by a police cruiser on more than one occasion. She was intractable. There were eight. Jeff was the sixth and eighth lawyer to represent these people. It was an extremely complicated and difficult situation. And as Jim Brockman will tell you, the people on the other side who were representing Maple Knoll complimented Jeff's representation. He was trying to keep this lady in the place where she wanted to be. It's an unfortunate thing that that from time to time you see people who truly are vulnerable. But the question is, what does that mean? Does that mean that the lawyer doesn't get paid because a client's vulnerable? I don't think that's the case. I think what we're required to do when we have a vulnerable client is to safeguard their rights. And I think he did. I don't think he thought he was being unfair to her. I think he was bending over backwards to try to be fair. And it's hard to understand how this conclusion came out of the final board finding, because it just isn't supported that we can see.
You've used your time, Mr. Napier.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Mr. Brockman.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jim Brockman. I'm here on behalf of the Cincinnati Bar Association. Your Honors, this case is a very simple case when it gets down to examining what happened and why the sanction was entered against Mr. Witt that was. It is nothing more than a bookkeeping and accounting situation, which this court has upheld in a number of situations, a definite suspension from the practice of law.
Counsel, did you try or participate in the original hearing?
Yes, Your Honor.
And your association agreed to a six-month stay, or three-month or six-month stay?
6 months, Your Honor.
6 months stay at that point?
Yes.
Are you now going back on that recommendation and stepping it up, or are you standing by your original recommendation?
Your Honor, we are in the position of trying to uphold, in all respects, the board's findings, and here's why. We did enter into stipulations. We recommended originally not just the stipulations, but we had an agreed-upon discipline. The panel did not accept that and wanted evidence. We therefore redid the stipulations, and we went and had evidence. What was different once we went before the panel and had evidence is there was evidence outside the stipulations that was presented to the panel that wasn't within the stipulations. The panel heard from Mr. Witt. Mr. Witt testified, and that added to the stipulations. And what that does, Your Honor, is put different evidence in front of that panel that was not in front of either side of this dispute. Mr. Napier or I represent.
What evidence was that?
That was Mr. Witt's testimony about how he handled his account, how he viewed what he did, and how he thought what he did might or might not affect Mrs. Sykes and her daughter. That was not part of the stipulations.
Does that go to, is that some evidence which has something to do with a lack of performance on behalf of Mrs. Sykes, or something that he did that injured her in some way that we don't have before us?
Is what it did, Your Honor, is convince the board, not the panel, mind you, the board, that there were aggravating circumstances. And the board set forth those aggravating circumstances.
Well, they say, wait a minute, the board found the respondent acted in his own interest and disregarded his duties to his client and profession in his representation of Barbara Sykes, given the particular vulnerability of the client and her daughter. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Yet, he cited for bookkeeping errors.
Correct.
And how do you go from the failure to appropriately maintain IOLTA accounts and time records and dollars and cents to this finding under the board's recommendation when there's nothing in this report that would suggest that?
There is in the record, though, what would suggest that based on Mr. Witt's testimony that the panel heard and the board reviewed.
what exactly in the record? Because I'm having a real hard time finding the take advantage of being proved. I understand the booking stuff, but when you make that leap after saying she wasn't harmed and difficult client and all the rigmarole that went with dealing with her, and then you make this conclusion, tell me what can you cite in the record that affirms that? Mr. Witt,
I think you were about to do that, so why don't you continue your answer?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Witt testified in his testimony before the panel, one, that he handled his accounts in the way that he did that was found. He also testified that he tried as best as he could to help these people, but that these people were very, very difficult. That the daughter would come into him at all times of the day, all times of the night, make phone calls. Testified that she might not have been stable and that she was difficult, and that the mother was in the nursing home, and that the mother was vulnerable, that he met with the mother. What the board then found based on that testimony is that because of the daughter's instability in the way that she was handling things, and the mother's disability of being in the nursing home, that they were particularly vulnerable. And under those circumstances, because they were vulnerable, that he did not fulfill his duties in his accounting requirements to keep good records, good contemporaneous records.
How were they injured by that accounting lax?
They are injured by that and that accounting lax by Mr. Witt not being able to turn over, when asked, good accounting records, and by his putting into his IOLTA account the first deposit, and then into his operating account the second two payments from the daughter on behalf of her mother.
But wasn't the record returned, the complete file returned to the daughter?
Mr. Witt's testimony is that the complete file was basically taken by the daughter.
And the panel never asked Karen Sykes to testify here. She was not part of these proceedings whatsoever.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
Okay, so you don't have any evidence from Karen. You've got the attorney scrambling to come up with $13,000 of accounting based on recollection.
Recollection, and I believe Mr. Witt's testimony was he used his day planner and phone records also.
Okay.
So he had those three sources to work with to try and reconstruct what his time was. But if you look at what the panel found and the board also found, based on his reconstruction, that at the time the payments were made, he had not earned any of that money.
He did eventually earn that money according to his time records, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and I still, there's nobody saying that he pocketed $10,000 and didn't spend any time working on behalf of Barbara Sykes.
That is 100% correct, Your Honor.
All right, and he came up with $13,000 worth of time records, and you have no dispute as to that whatsoever, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you're not saying that the bills were, or the time records was frivolously spent?
Absolutely not.
And so the panel and the board's, or excuse me, the board's then position is because he didn't keep it in account A and he kept it in account B, that disadvantaged a vulnerable woman.
That is what the board apparently found, Your Honor, based on their review of the entire record, which I readily admit that is different than what the panel found.
Right.
All right. Putting aside this issue of whether or not there was aggravating factors or not, this court has already upheld, in similar cases, definite suspensions from the practice of law. This court has found that when there have been situations where there has been a violation of 9102A, that a definite suspension is warranted. And this court has also held that there need be no proof of harm to anyone in order to support a definite suspension from the practice of law in these circumstances. The cases that I would direct are ones that we have cited in our brief. It's Close versus Columbus Bar Association, Cuyahoga County Bar Association versus Nagolian. In both of those, The attorney was found to have violated 9102A, failure to maintain identifiable accounts, and 9102B3, failure to maintain complete records of all funds. In this case, the panel and the board found that Mr. Witt did that by, one, placing the first payment into an IOLTA account, the first check that he received, and the second and the third into his operating account, which is totally inconsistent with his testimony that I consider all this money to be mine because when I take my fees, it's all fees deemed earned upon receipt. The panel also found, and the board upheld this finding, that his practice of withdrawing money from his IOLTA account with an ATM card and writing checks on it, blank checks at the bank, also were in violation of those accounting principles. I would submit to your honors that based on those findings alone, it was entirely within the province of the board to give a definite suspension based on the two cases that we just cited. Even if you totally push aside this factor of how did the board come up with an aggravating circumstance on the basis of this evidence? I will also tell this court, and I mean this sincerely, Mr. Witt cooperated fully. Mr. Witt, and this is more, I guess, as a person and another lawyer than an advocate here, Mr. Witt doesn't have a black heart and was trying to purposefully take advantage of people like we've seen down in Cincinnati and down there. When we have to investigate some of these, Mr. Witt made a mistake. He made what he felt was an honest mistake. And I would be totally remiss if I tried to stand up in front of your honors and say anything less than that. But unfortunately, under this court's precedence, if there are these accounting errors, bookkeeping errors, a definite suspension has been upheld.
In the cases that you've cited, was the mitigating factor that a CPA firm was hired to assist and provide guidance and control part of those cases that you cite?
It was, at least in one of the cases, Your Honor, and that's the Trainer case from Cincinnati Bar Association. And that one, it was a six months suspension with a 6 month stay, which is what we had originally proposed and the panel rejected.
I understand that.
And that was one of them. And Mr. Witt has done that. We have verified that he in fact has sought out the services of a CPA to help with his office practices. Your Honors, I still see that I have some time left, but I really don't have much more to add than
You're
what
not
I have
required unless to use it.
This panel has any other questions for me.
Thank you, Mr. Brockman.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Napier, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
From Member Bettler at the original hearing, would it be fair for us to say today that the problem with the Sykes matter has to do with you having funds in the IOLTA account that you believe would not have been in there and then should not have been in there, and then withdrawing those funds in a variety of ways, like you said, with a debit card and counter checks and so forth? The witness, that's Mr. Witt, I would say that's accurate. What he did was he put flat fee money in an IOLTA account. That's what we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.